Conquest of the Land, Chapter 49, Joshua 9. After the conquest and capture of Ai, of which we have told you in the former chapter, the Israelites returned to Gilgal. Already two cities have been conquered, Jericho and Ai. All had gone well. The Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, was their mighty helper. They were cheerful and happy, waiting for the command from Joshua to march deeper into the land. One day a small group of men approached their camp. The Israelites inquisitively watched them come. They looked so strange. The Israelites see immediately that they are foreigners. When these men come a little closer, the children of Israel look at them with great astonishment. My, but they look untidy and ragged. Some Israelites begin to laugh. The clothing which they wear is torn and full of holes. The sandals upon their feet are old and worn. Laden upon their donkeys are old and broken leather sacks. In those days when people traveled, they kept their drinking water or wine in sacks made of leather rather than in bottles as we do. These strangers' sacks have such large holes in them, they must be tied with string to keep the wine from flowing out. Who are you? A few Israelites ask. Where do you come from, and what do you want? We have come from a very far country, their answer rings out. Our clothing and shoes were new when we began our journey, but now they are worn out. The bread which they take from their bags is dry and moldy. They say, just look. This bread was fresh when we came from home. It was warm from our ovens, but now it is dry and moldy. The Israelites look at them in surprise. Come with us, they beckon. They bring these men to Joshua and the princes of Israel. Joshua also asks them where they came from and what they want. We have come from a very far country and would like to make a league with you. We are ambassadors sent by our king. We have heard in our country that your God is such a mighty God. We have been told of the wonders in Egypt and of the journey through the wilderness. It also has come to our ears that the mighty kings on the other side of Jordan, Sihon and Og, have been defeated by you. Therefore we have come to ask if you will make a league with us. We will then be your servants. We will submit ourselves to you. After they have told their message, they silently wait for an answer. Joshua is impressed with their story, and it can be honestly said that he is pleased to hear that the distant nations have respect for them. It is good, Joshua answers. We will enter into a league with you. We will not kill you. Yes, Joshua and the princes of Israel swear to it with an oath. They swear by the God of Israel that they will let them live. But that is very foolish of Joshua. Foolish? Why? Well, Joshua should have first asked the Lord if he were permitted to do that, if the men were telling the truth. However, Joshua did not ask God, which was a pitiful thing, for a few days later it became evident that they had been deceived. These foreign visitors had not come from a far country, but they lived close by. They were inhabitants of the city of Gibeon, a Canaanitish city, a short distance from the city of Ai. Joshua frightens exceedingly when he hears this, because what he and the elders had done was very wrong. God had strictly forbidden them to enter into a league with any of the inhabitants of Canaan, and they had done just this thing. They had sworn with an oath, and an oath must not be broken under any circumstance. How can this mistake be corrected? Joshua sends for these men. Why did you do that? He asks sternly. You have deceived us. You left your home wearing torn clothes and carrying old broken leathern wine bottles. That nice tale of yours was nothing but lies and a cheat. Joshua pronounces a curse upon them because of their deceit. The Gibeonites blush and are ashamed. Finally, one of them comes to the fore and he speaks. Sir, we will honestly tell you. We have heard all that has happened, of how the walls of Jericho fell down of themselves and of what happened to the inhabitants of Ai. We were so afraid, sir, for we knew that your God is mightier than our idols. We did not doubt, but that you would conquer this land, and therefore we did it. Sir, we feared for our lives, and to save our lives, we deceived you. Here we are. Do with us what you will. All are silent for a moment. In anxious suspense, the Gibeonites wait to hear their sentence. Yes, Joshua finally says, there is nothing to do about it. We have entered into a league with you, and that league we have confirmed with an oath. This oath we cannot break. We will not slay you, but we will make you to be servants, servants in the worship of our God. From this day forward, you will be hewers of wood for the sacrifices which are brought to our tabernacle, and you must also carry the water that is used there. Thus, you will be helpful and useful in God's service. The Gibeonites are happy when they hear this. They immediately agree to it. Watch them going back to their city Gibeon. On the way they laugh and say to each other, that has turned out well. We will not be slain. Oh yes, we are willing to chop wood and carry water. They joyfully come to their native city and tell of their experiences and what Joshua said they had to do. That night, gladness reigns in the homes of the Gibeonites. They can sleep peacefully for the first time in weeks. Their lives have been spared. A few days later, the walls of Gibeon are packed with people. The heavy gates are locked, and the expression on the faces of the people reveals fear and anxiety. What has happened? Why do they look so terrified? Oh, look! Outside the walls, around the entire city, there are soldiers. Not a few, but thousands upon thousands of soldiers. Gibeon is besieged. By whom? The other Canaanites also were afraid of the Israelites. They too knew what had happened to Jericho and Ai, and were afraid for their lives. One day they heard that the people of the great city of Gibeon had entered into a covenant with the Israelites. When the king of Jerusalem heard this, he became furious. That is mean, he says. That is cowardly. The Gibeonites are betrayers. Instead of helping us, they have made peace with the enemy. But we will not permit that. We will punish them. Adonizedek, for so the king of Jerusalem was named, sends messengers to the cities in his vicinity. Will you help me? He asks. Then together we will fight against the Gibeonites for their treachery. We will kill every one of those traitors to our country. The kings of the other cities immediately say that it is good. Yes, they will do that. All of them together will teach the Gibeonites to stop those mean tricks. They muster their armies and march to Jerusalem. There the five armies combine into one large, tremendous army. Five kings come together to punish Gibeon. These thousands upon thousands of soldiers march as quickly as possible from Jerusalem to the city of Gibeon and besiege it. So it isn't any wonder that the Gibeonites are so afraid. It isn't possible for them to defend themselves against all these soldiers. Oh, the Israelites have made the promise that they would not kill them, but now they will be slain by their own native Canaanites. What must they do? Do you know what? They will send a message to Joshua and ask if he will help them, if he will come and deliver them. At night, when it is dark, the gate of Gibeon is carefully opened a wee bit, and a few Gibeonites slip through. However, the gate is immediately closed behind these men. The messengers from Gibeon sneak cautiously further and walk upon their toes, for what they are doing is very dangerous. They must go straight through the camp of the Canaanites. If they are caught, they are lost. But they get through. When they are once beyond the Canaanites, they run as fast as they are able to the camp of the Israelites. Oh, help us, they plead with Joshua. Five kings of the Canaanites with their armies have come to Gibeon and have besieged our city. They want to kill all of us. What must Joshua do? Help them? Yes, but those five kings are so strong. Suppose the Israelites should be defeated? Joshua goes to his tent and bends his knees. Lord, what must I do? He asks. Wilt thou give me advice? And the Lord answers him, Go against them, Joshua, for you will be victorious. I will give this great army into your hand. Fear not. Oh, boys and girls, do you ever ask the Lord for advice? Or can you manage it alone? Don't you need the Lord? If you are burdened with difficulties, then you can assuredly bend your knees and ask the Lord to help you. For the Lord has said in His word, And call upon me in the day of trouble, I will deliver thee. Joshua also experienced this, for now he knows what to do. He immediately calls his soldiers together. That same night they go on the road to Gibeon. They march through the entire night. And when the light of morning comes, the army of Israel has come close to Gibeon. The five kings of the Canaanites do not know anything of this. They think that Joshua and the Israelites are still at Gilgal. Unexpectedly, they are attacked by Joshua and his army. They frighten and soon are in confusion. It isn't long before the army of the Canaanites begins to flee. Thousands are killed by the Israelites. But something else happens. Heavy, dark clouds come floating over them, and suddenly it begins to hail violently. Large hailstones fall down, and each is directed by the Lord. In the Bible we read that the Lord cast down great hailstones from heaven upon the Canaanites. It seemed as though they were bullets, and each stone hit its mark. Thousands of the fleeing Canaanites were struck down by the hail. More died from the hailstones than were killed by the Israelites. Five kings also fled. However, when they saw that they could not make their escape, they secretly crept away into a dark hole, a cave. But the Israelites find them. They immediately notify Joshua and ask what must be done to them. Shut them in the cave for the time being, answers their leader. Look, the Israelites roll a large stone before the opening so that the kings cannot escape. They will first pursue the enemy. Later, they will reckon with the kings. In the meantime, evening is approaching. It will not be very long before the darkness of night will be upon them. Pitiful, for the rest of the Canaanites will be able to escape in the darkness. The sun is going down, and the moon is coming up. Oh, if it would only remain light for a few more hours, then the Canaanites would be completely wiped out, and they could never assemble together again. Joshua also sees this, and a silent prayer comes from his heart. Suddenly he cries out, Sun, stand thou still, and moon, stand still too. Yes, Joshua can say that, but will that happen? That cannot take place, can it? No, usually it would not, but here it does. The sun stands still, and it does not become dark. The Lord hears and answers Joshua. This again is a wonder of God's might. This surely is a great disappointment to the fleeing Canaanites. They longingly have looked forward to the time when it would be dark, for then the Israelites could not see them anymore. But it remained light. The entire army of the five kings was wiped out, which means that almost every soldier was slain. Finally, the Israelites return. They have obtained a splendid victory. The five kings who fled to the cave are now brought before Joshua. They must kneel, and Joshua commands the captains of Israel to put their feet upon the necks of these kings. This is a great mortification for them. Fear not, Joshua says to the captains, for so the Lord will do to the other kings. He will give them in our hands, and we shall kill them all. After that, the five kings are hanged. In the weeks that followed, Joshua conquered every city of the five kings. The complete southern portion of the land of Canaan was conquered by the Israelites. But mighty Canaanitish nations still lived in the north. The most distinguished king among them was Jabin. When Jabin heard what had taken place in the southern part of the land, he called together all the kings who lived in the northern part. Together they will try to stop the Israelites. Their army was still greater than that of the five southern kings. Besides, those Canaanites had many horses and iron battle wagons. It surely will not be so easy to defeat this army. But do you know what was so beneficial for the Israelites? The Lord promised that He would give the Israelites a complete victory. And if the Lord helps, then it will be done. When Joshua hears this, he marches as soon and as quickly as he can to the north. The Israelites are already near them before Jabin and his helpers hear of it. The Canaanites are taken by surprise by Joshua. The enormous army of Jabin is totally defeated. After the battle, Joshua also conquers the main cities in the north. The Lord promised that He would help the Israelites, and the Lord did it too. All told, Joshua defeated 31 kings and reduced their cities. It took them 7 years of fighting to do this. Now, for the first time, the Israelites were able to take a little rest. All the Canaanites were not yet conquered and slain, but they could do that later. Joshua was getting so old. Those who remained in Canaan must be defeated after Joshua's death. Behold, the Israelites assemble themselves. They will now divide the land which they have conquered. The tribe of Reuben, the tribe of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh will not share with them. They have already received their inheritance on the other side of Jordan. The recently conquered land will be divided among the balance of the tribes. Each tribe will receive a portion. The tribe of Levi is the only one which does not receive an unbroken piece of land. Why not? Where must the Levites live? The Lord took care of that too. They received 48 cities with a piece of land around each city. Each tribe gave a few cities to the Levites. In so doing, the Levites were spread over the whole nation. Do you know why that was? The Levites belonged to the tabernacle, to the service of the Lord. Isn't that right? And in this way, the Levites could instruct the people. They could teach the people the laws of God. 6 cities which were given to the Levites became cities of refuge. What are they? Children, now you must be very attentive. If a murder was committed among the Israelites, the murderer must be slain. The closest relative of the murdered had to kill the murderer. He was called the Avenger of Blood. But now suppose there were 2 Israelites who were chopping wood together. They are 2 intimate friends, and they are helping each other. Suddenly, the axe of one Israelite flies off its handle, and the sharp iron strikes the other Israelite in the head, so that he falls dead upon the ground. That is not a murder. It happened by accident. He didn't do it purposely. No, on the contrary, he frightens exceedingly when he sees it. What now? Must this Israelite be slain? He really couldn't help it. No, such a person may flee to one of the cities of refuge. He is safe inside the walls of this city. The Avenger of Blood cannot kill him there. Those persons must remain in the city of refuge until the death of the high priest. 3 of these cities of refuge lay on this side of Jordan. The city of Hebron lay in the southern section, Shechem in the center, and Kadesh in the north. 3 of these cities of refuge also lay on the other side of Jordan. Thus, in the land of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, they were Bezer, Ramoth, and Golan. If anyone would flee to such a city of refuge who purposely murdered someone, in other words, who was really a murderer, would he also be safe within the walls of that city of refuge? No. It would be investigated by the rulers of that city. And if it were proven that he murdered another Israelite out of hatred, then the murderer was delivered to the Avenger of Blood, and he was slain. Remember this portion, do you hear? The tabernacle received a place in the small town of Shiloh. Shiloh means rest. Isn't that a nice name? This town lay approximately in the center of the land. When everything was settled, The 40,000 soldiers of the tribes of Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh could return to their wives and children. Didn't they go over Jordan with their brethren to help them conquer the land? They received the land of Sihon and Og as their dwelling place, didn't they? Now they are permitted to return, and they go. Oh, they are so happy. They first bid farewell to Joshua and the captains, and then they depart. As soon as they are over Jordan and arrive in their own country, they build a large altar. It can be seen from far. Oh, yes. Why? Do they want to sacrifice on it from now on? Not that, surely. The sacrifices were only supposed to be brought to the tabernacle where the priests were. Do these men already forsake the Lord? No, they did not build this altar to sacrifice upon it, but they were afraid that later, when they were dead, and that the other Israelites would say to their children, "You do not belong to us. We will have nothing to do with you." They did not want this to happen. Therefore, they built this great altar. That was a sign that they also belonged to the children of Israel, even though they did live on the other side of Jordan.